Hello and welcome to Two Fat Expats, where we are all about packing as much into your expat life as you can. And that's what we mean when we say fat. We mean full and overflowing. Although by the end of the summer, I am a little bit fat. This expat podcast is listened to in over 160 countries, and we have a Facebook group with over 18,000 members. I'm Kirsty Rice. I'm an Aussie expat based in Qatar, and each week I'm joined by Nikki Moffat, who's also an Aussie, and she's in Hamburg, Germany. Together we have 12 locations between us, which is a lot of how do you buy tickets for the public transport system, and oh god, is Google Translate going to make me look like an idiot again? How are you, Nikki Moffat?
I'm very fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. And Google Translate makes me look like an idiot on the regular, I have to say.
I don't know, it's always backwards, isn't it? It's always
and Germans love these long words that go together for hours and hours, and then they don't break down quite the same way anyway.
Whereas Australians like to cut those long words
down
and put an IE on the end of everything.
Or an O.
Yes. Okay, Nikki, we had a quick summer podcast yesterday where we were committed to a 30-minute podcast, which meant that, of course, it was 45. And we talked about my summer. And we did the letter Y and went off to a fantastic city in Korea that started with the letter Y. And I can't remember it, but I'm sure you can, Nikki. But anyway, now it's your turn. You're going to tell me about your summer and what you got up to and what you did. So when did your summer start?
Well, not as early as yours, let me tell you. And certainly weather-wise, I don't think we've even hit it yet, but never mind. No.
So okay. I was saying yesterday I went off to Italy at the end of May. So when did school break up for you? Was it June?
It was the June, end of June, day before my birthday. Awesome. If I could just go for two more days, I could have had a lovely day by myself. But no, it was the first day of the school holidays.
Wow.
My beautiful children. So right at the end of June, school broke up.
Yeah.
And then the weekend after, we got the sitter in, and my children, they don't enjoy to travel so much. So they were very particular, and we said, we're going to meet some friends in Mallorca. Would you like to come? And they said, no. So we said, that's fine. You can stay here. So
okay, we need to go back. We need to go back. So I know that you're currently wearing a bracelet that talks about that has a list of all the countries your children have lived in with their names and birth dates and whatever. So are you telling me that these children that you have dragged around the world, these wonderful TCKs, these third culture kids that have gone to all these international schools and spoken in four different accents, are you telling me they don't like to travel?
They don't like to travel.
That's
they cold. Are quite terrible at traveling.
And it's not that they just don't like to travel with you, is it? Because I've got a feeling I saw something from Willow, your daughter, where she went and traveled with someone else over the summer and she wasn't a fan of that so much either.
No, her view is, and I'll get to what she did, but her view is if you're going to pay to go to a hotel or an Airbnb, you should stay in it. You should utilize the facilities that are there and don't go out and see things, exploring. Why take a car and drive around for a day? That seems to be a waste of your facilities that you've already paid for.
Okay. So tell me, you and Sam went off to Mallorca?
We did. And it was the most hilarious thing because we had friends who said, do you want to meet us? We're going to Barcelona and Mallorca. And we said, we'll meet you in Mallorca because we've done Barcelona. And these are the friends we met 2 years ago at Lake Como, which was a beautiful holiday, but disastrous events occurred while we were there. So
you got robbed, right?
We were robbed, and then our house basement flooded also.
Oh,
and
that's right.
Our street had burning cars because of
now,
the G20.
just to explain to people, your house in America was for sale. and you were in Lake Como, but living in Germany, and then got the call to say your basement's flooded in America.
Correct.
Not
and that
much
was the weekend,
you could do, I imagine.
Weekend before renters were moving in.
Oh, gold. Yeah. It was that you had all the luggage and the passport, or maybe not the passports, but all the luggage and everything in the back of the boot of the car. And someone broke into the boot and took all your luggage, right?
They didn't even have to break in. Apparently they've got such an efficient jamming system that they just have an equivalent lock where they just press a button, it unlocks the car, they take the things, they relock the car. We went back to the car. We had no idea there was a problem because there was nothing to indicate anything was out of place.
Yes.
And we went to the police. They said, oh, yes, that's very common. We said,
thanks. Great. Anyway, back to Mallorca.
Back to Mallorca. So we're at Mallorca we're going for 4 nights and we had our carry-on bags, and we got to the airport and they said the flight is full, so we want to take all the people who bought the really cheap tickets. We're taking your carry-on bags and we're putting them underneath. And I said to my husband, oh no, this is not good. This is the start of a bad idea. We of course did have the very cheap tickets, so they took our bags from us. However, we were happily reunited with them at the other end, although it was dicey there for a moment.
Oh, yes.
But it was really interesting because they did check your tickets, and if you had a more expensive ticket, they let you keep your bag to take it on the plane and put it in the above the overhead locker, which is the first time I've really experienced that. But I tell you what I did experience.
Think, what happens in that boardroom when that person makes that decision? Do you know, like you know that there was someone at a corporate level that said, I know what we'll do.
This is what we'll do.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
What we'll do is when we have to force people to do things, the people with the cheapest tickets get forced first.
Okay, sorry, I butted in. So, you did get your bags after
But we're standing at our gate in Hamburg before we left, and we looked around and every single gate where we were standing had a flight to Mallorca the same hour. They were 15 minutes apart. So that was our first clue. Mallorca had sunshine and a lot of Germans. So we touched down. There's a Deutsche Bank storefront in the airport in Mallorca.
Yes.
Everything is in German. Everyone's speaking German. It's all German. So that was fine for us. Anyway, so we got there and we've become our parents when we're traveling now. So we arrived at the hotel and our room wasn't ready. So they said, we'll just go upstairs and have a drink by the pool while we're waiting for our room to be ready.
Yeah.
And so we went upstairs and that was at 3 o'clock or two o'clock, I think. Our room was meant to be ready at 3. At 9:30 p.m., we went back down. Picked up our room key because we just met these people by the pool, this American couple from Mississippi, and just spent all afternoon drinking cocktails and chatting to them.
Oh, how nice. That's my favorite. I think that is my favorite thing to do. Meet random stranger from random place and just become best friends over 25 drinks.
And they kept criticizing us, saying we were slow Australians, like we needed to keep up. So I kept feeling pressure to have more drinks. Except the one thing was I was still in my jeans. I sat there in 30 degrees for the whole afternoon because I didn't leave. But anyway, it was a great afternoon. Our friends turned up. We had a wonderful few days with them. The sun is very hot. Now, Mallorca, I have never been before. We hired a car. We drove to some other parts of the island. It can be a very different experience. We went out one night to a restaurant in sort of everywhere is touristy, but a more touristy bit than we were in. And it felt a lot like Patong Beach or Kuta. Like there were groups of young men and women in various states of drunkenness. And also wearing T-shirts
tour
T-shirts. And it was just, we said, one, we're too old for this. Two, we're glad we're not staying here around this area. And three, it just had a very Asian holiday destination feel to it in that it was hot and humid and there are lots of people drinking too much.
And things getting a bit shady.
Yes, it was getting a bit shady. But the daytime and where we stayed was beautiful, sunny, gorgeous, I highly recommend.
Right.
If you're German, you can get anything you want there. All the restaurants, all the menus, everything in German. All good.
So what do you think was sort of the highlight of Mallorca for you?
I think the day we hired a car and, well, for me it was just the sunshine because we'd come out of a long, shitty winter. And just the warmth. You know that feeling? Well, you do know that feeling where it's warm 24 hours a day.
Oh, yeah.
You can walk outside at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, I got that one down pat. After 9 years in the Middle East, I've got that one. I'm with you. Yes.
But had you spent any time in Northern Europe, you may miss that.
Yeah.
In the future, you may miss that feeling.
Yes.
I know it's impossible for you to contemplate at the moment, but there is a possibility in the future you may miss
Absolutely.
That feeling.
Absolutely, yes.
So that feeling of just humid, warm air, so lovely. We went one day and we drove to this little beach, you know, one of those tiny little beaches that are sort of have high rock walls and they're a little finger indent. Beautiful beach, packed, really packed because we were there in summer season.
But are they those European beaches where you hire a chair and a towel and an umbrella?
The main ones are on the main tourist strip, but these are just not, there's no hiring of towels and umbrellas. They're sort of hiking up and down a bit of a cliff.
Is that a uniquely European thing to do? You know, because we don't do that in Australia at all. You arrive with your own towel and you throw it on the beach and, you know, you spend the day and do whatever. But, you know, Italy, France, you know, all of these places, you arrive at the local beach and, you know, it probably, I guess, it would be your average Australian's idea of hell, you know, to be shoulder to shoulder on an organised chair with an organised group, you know, ordering your drinks, right? You know, that's not how we work at the beach at all.
No. I think, European, I think some beaches in, like, some parts of Bali, like some beaches in Asia do have it when they're attached to resorts, but I don't think general beaches have it.
No.
Like I think general beaches have it.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, it is funny. Perhaps people can tell us where they've been to a beach with an organised rotation that you wouldn't expect. Is there somewhere you wouldn't expect that you turned up and there was a...
Yeah, and does the beach uniquely describe the culture? Where else did you go? So you did, mate, I'm aware we're at the 15 minute mark now, Nikki.
Yeah,
we got to step it up. So Mallorca was without kids. Did you go anywhere with children over the summer?
Well, we did, but by mistake. So 2 weeks after Mallorca, we said we were going to Lutso, and we had friends who went and did the Mont Blanc walk. So you walk around on the top of all the mountains.
Oh, wow.
Guided tour. They said, do you want to come or do you want to see us before or after? We said, we'll see you after you've been mountaineering for a week.
We'll
check in then. So they said, fine, we'll meet you in Lucerne for the weekend. And we did go there. And the 3 or 4 days before we went, our childcare fell through. So my daughter's sister's friend wasn't available when she was going to be to come and hang out. And so, because we're at the age now where our kids don't really need a lot of supervision, but they just do need some.
Yeah, they just need someone.
And they also need someone
sure.
who can speak German and call the police if they need, maybe.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I said to them, I said, okay, here's the deal. You can come with us or you can, I flailed around looking for childcare. One of my friends offered to have them at her house for the weekend. I said, you can go there for the weekend or you can come with us. And one chose to go there for the weekend and one chose to come with us for the weekend. So off we went with one child, which I know you did went with one child too, and it's a much bigger difference for you, but it was quite so different traveling just with one child.
Yes.
And off we went to Luzon. Now, I had previously studied it, and I thought, oh, it's about a 7-hour drive. So if we get up really early and drive, you know, we can be there by just after lunch. That'll be very pleasant. And the night before, I was sitting down to do some more planning, and I Google mapped it, and it said 11 hours to drive.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, no, that's not going to work with me advising my husband. We're driving 11 hours to spend 2 nights and then come back. So I quickly got onto the train and booked train tickets for us.
Fantastic.
Which was much quicker. Well, much quicker.
I was going to say, that's a much better idea.
Yeah. And so we went in relative comfort and relative expense, because last minute train tickets aren't that cheap. They
and
were
so
cheaper
how
than
long?
Last minute plane tickets. It was 6 hours to Basel, which is on the border.
Yes.
And then it was an hour and a bit after Basel. So, but can I tell you, on the train from Hamburg to Luzern, we're in first class because they were the tickets that were left, and there was people, they come to your seat. So you don't have to go to the dining car to buy drinks or sandwiches, because they'll just come around and see what you want and bring it to you.
Yeah.
And there's Wi-Fi. So Willow just watched Netflix the whole way, probably mm-hmm. several episodes of Friends.
Yeah.
And it was so easy, and it wasn't overcrowded, because during some of the trains are really crowded. So if you walked through the dining car down into second class, there was people sitting on the floor and on the hallways and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But where we were, it was very nice. And we had a table, like we sat around a table facing each other on a table. So Sam had his laptop out. He was working. Willow was on Netflix. And I was happy as a Larry. And there's plugs, power plugs for your phone.
Yes.
So it was perfect.
Totally sold on train travel through Europe after our experience as well. Same thing, just very comfortable, really easy, you know, and yeah, you can sit and read the newspaper on your iPad, and just watch the world go by without any of the dramas of where are we going to park the car, are we getting a ticket on this particular freeway that we don't really understand what we're doing, and you know, then you just
did we just get a speeding fine?
Yeah, and particularly if you're going city to city, you just jump in an Uber when you get to where you get, or you know, Google Map it that you're staying close to the train station.
Oh, when we got there, we could see our accommodation from the train station. It was just across the lake,
so it was perfect.
Across the bridge, it was so perfect.
Yeah,
Luzern, very beautiful, yes. An Annecy kind of feel to it. That kind of on the lake and everything,
just divine,
gorgeous.
Yeah.
Arrived there, I thought, I didn't actually check the room to put, but I thought, one child, what can go wrong with one child? You can throw a mattress on a floor. No, you cannot throw a mattress on the floor. The hotel was a capacity. You couldn't have any more people in the hotel.
Oh,
so we arrived.
Gosh.
And they said, you can't have an extra person in your room. So you'll have to book another room. We said, okay. They said, no, but there are none here.
Oh, no.
So then I had booked this amazing room, and I put a photo on the Instagram, but I could put it up again. It was so gorgeous. It was just for two nights. I looked right over the river, which goes into the lake. Beautiful flower boxes, little balcony facing out, perfect, beautiful, romantic. And I spent the weekend in it with my 12-year-old daughter while my husband stayed at a different hotel down the street.
No.
Oh. Because as soon as we said, okay, we'll take the other room, they said, yes, but you have to keep the child here because the child can't be by themselves in the other hotel.
Of course.
I may be irresponsible booker, but I'm not an irresponsible parent.
All right. And so just a very quick, because we're now at 21 minutes, Nikki, what did you do?
Pre-editing. We could dial it back.
What did you do when you were in Luzern?
We did a lot of walking, which when they climbed mountains seemed to be ridiculous. But, yeah, so we did a trip around the lake on the ferry. So we travelled just by Luzern. There's a very famous mountain view, a peak, but it was cloudy. And so we decided not to go up the mountain because that would be a waste of time and an effort.
Yeah.
But we just caught the ferry around the lake, which I just love doing, and it was just very beautiful. So, we were just there for 2 days. So we did that one day. We watched the tennis in an English pub another day.
Gorgeous.
We had a really good time. Just lots of walking, lots of eating, and just
being. And was the food beautiful?
The food was, it was okay. It was a bit Germanish. So.
Okay.
We were in the German part of Switzerland, so it was,
I see, because it's such a unique part of the world, isn't it? Because you've got a little bit of everybody there.
Yes.
You've got a little bit of Swiss, you've got a little bit of French, you've got a little bit of German. Yeah, it's quite something, isn't it? Because I thought in Annecy, I thought the food was just superb because it was very French.
Yeah, it was amazing. The food was amazing in Annecy, I agree.
Yeah, and such it a French destination like too, like such a French holiday destination. And, you know, I would never have gone to Annecy if it weren't for our two Fat Expats group because
– And me too.
Yeah, and I don't know if you remember, Nikki, because my – husband was going to be in Switzerland and he was going to be in Zurich. I think it was. Was it Zurich?
Geneva, probably.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yes, it was. He wasn't in Zurich at all. He was in Geneva. And so I was thinking I'll go and spend a few days with him in Geneva, but it was our wonderful Two Fat Expats Facebook group that said, no. If you're going to Geneva, you need to get in the car and drive across the border and go to Annecy. And I was thinking, why? But it was so good, like really good. Yeah.
I totally agree because they sent me the same way because I was meeting a friend in Geneva and I had Airbnb accommodation that was cancelled by the Airbnb host.
That's right. That was last year, wasn't it?
Yeah. And everybody said, go to Annecy instead. And he said, yes, that's a good direction.
Yeah.
So that was it. We had a lot of balls in the air over summer, which I can talk about later, but another day. So we just had two quick trips, but we did send our daughter off to Greece for 2 weeks.
Right.
Which was very enjoyable for all of us. So she went with her bestie and her bestie's dad, and the three of them went off to Greece. And they stayed at one of those full service resorts, which includes, all your food and drink, which is great, but also the nightly entertainment. So every night I was getting video clips of karaoke or discos or The Lion King when that was Mamma Mia.
Dances.
It was just fantastic. And they had 14 full days there. Yeah. And
it is the weirdest thing though, isn't it? Sending your child for a sleepover that requires a passport.
Yeah. So weird. And I really thought I would be fine and wouldn't miss her, but I did miss her quite a reasonable amount.
Oh, it's really hard. It's really difficult.
It is hard.
There is just something about that distance as well. It's so different to
It's a flight away. It's not just they're not just right there.
So I've just had the email from my brand new year eight. So to me, he's still a baby. I've just had the email saying he's off for his school camp, and we live in Qatar, and school camp is either in India or Malaysia, and. Same thing.
Where's it going?
Well, I'm yet to know. Like they just said, it will be one of those places we will let you know. And it was just that feeling of this is just getting all too bizarre to have children all over the place like that. It's just a little bit hard to deal with. Yes. Anyway, lucky kids. And very, very lucky kids.
Lucky kids. And that's one more weekend was that the boys went away together. So my son and my husband went off to the beach for the weekend to do boy things.
And when you say the beach, what does that mean? If you're in Hamburg and you go to the beach, where do you go?
You go to the North Sea. They went to a place called Sankt Peter Ordnung, which doesn't have chairs and it has those old-fashioned little boxes, with the striped cushions and the striped awnings. I'll also put a photo of those up on our Instagram page.
Okay.
But it's that kind of beach.
Right.
They also do a lot of kite surfing there and that kind of stuff. So
cool.
And there's a spa pool and whatever. Anyway, it was so wonderful to be at home by myself for 2 days. I felt very decadent.
Yes.
I'm not sure quite why, but I don't ever have that. So that was very fun. So that was my summer.
You kind of have your Tom Cruise risky business moment, don't you?
Yes.
Just get in your undies and slide across the floor in your socks. I really need to mention the socks rather than the undies. Oh, dear. Anyway, as I said in our last summer episode, because these two episodes will come out together as a double whammy, but as I said, we want to hear about your holidays and what you did and where you went and why you loved it. Give us your recommendations. We would love to hear them. We're at twofatexpats.com. Just click on the microphone that you see on our webpage and leave us a message. We really, really, really would love to hear from you. Okay, Nikki, location, location, location. Where we're up to Z or Z, yeah, depending on where you come from. Where did you go? Who did you find? What did you do?
I spoke to Janet Z, who lives in Zambia. So Janet, so interesting. Another, I think everybody, all of our listeners, so interesting. I could talk to them all for hours, yeah, and I do. But Janet works at NYU as a researcher. She researches on inclusive education for children with disabilities. And she splits her time between Zambia and New York. And so she's currently doing research in Zambia, and so they're on an 8-month stay. They usually do a minimum 2 to 3 months over summer, but this time they're doing it longer, and they've been doing this for 5 years. And they do it because her husband is Zambian, and she also wants to raise their daughter with the sense of identity she doesn't think is available the same way in Canada or the US. She's originally Canadian. So, and I said to them, what about you're living in New York? Like, what happens? Do you have an apartment in New York? And she said, yes, we do. And because I work at NYU, they get subsidized apartments. I said, so subletting that, she said, you can take your pick and choose of who sublets it. You always have a line miles long for people who are waiting to sublet. So it's perfect, because I was thinking, if you only go a few months a year somewhere, how do you arrange all that?
But yeah,
she have a perfect situation. Pretty good. So about 9 minutes into our conversation, I got to the first question, which was, on a scale of 1 to 10, what is your current level of in love with Zambia?
Say that my current level of in love?
Yes.
I'd say like a 7, probably.
And is that on the way up, or is it fluctuating since you came back? Or
I guess it fluctuates. Like last week, even though I was in a different province for work, and then and it was a couple of times where I got to see a different town. That's more of a holiday town. So that appealed to some of my other interests. So I think it fluctuates a little bit. But
do you have a best local find? Something that you do or place you go or somewhere you eat or just something that's special
definitely
for you?
Yeah, they have really great coffee shops here that have, and because of the weather, like they're like always like great outdoor seatings. And so one place that we've loved since it opened, like now it like opened 4 years ago, I think we were like the first customers on the day it opened. And it's just, the food is amazing, everything's amazing. So it's called Zambean, and so it's not a chain, it's, you know, locally owned. They have like locally roasted coffees and like sourced foods, and just since it's opened, it's had the same staff, and I always feel like that speaks so much to a place.
Absolutely.
It's had the same staff, and they're just phenomenal, like service, and the quality of the food is great, and just such a beautiful setting. And again, so being someone who works from home, I spend a lot of time working in coffee shops, and that's always a favorite and a place where I always feel welcome, no matter how many days in a row I'm sitting there in my laptop, that they're always incredibly welcoming. So it's not in a mall, and a lot of people here, it's very much a mall culture, or can be, and so because it's not in a mall, so I appreciate that. Like, there's a nice outdoor seated area, and yeah.
Cool. What drives you crazy?
I would say load shedding.
Yeah.
So
sorry, having lived in South Africa, I'm with you. I feel you.
Yes, right? Yeah. So right now it's at least 4 hours a day, and it's not on the schedule. We just literally 2 hours ago got over a 36-hour period, so everything in my freezer melted. All my ice cream. We're like this afternoon just cooking up a storm. So yes, that all the meat that defrosted, yes, that we can, you know, not have to throw it away. That's what we're doing tonight. So just the unpredictability of load shedding.
Yeah. I don't think there's anyone that could disagree with that. What's one place you'd love to live?
In the world or?
In the world. Anywhere.
In the world. For a short time, I would love to live in Australia. Because I've never lived there. And I've heard lots of great things. And I'm always looking for, I really appreciate cities that are on the ocean.
We've got a lot of those. All the cities in our country are built around oceans, because we all live around the edge.
Exactly. So I think that's great. And it's hard to find that in the world, because like in Canada, we have that in Vancouver, but it rains a lot. We have that in Halifax. It rains a lot. And yeah, I guess, and even within the US, I mean, I guess I haven't lived in California, but on the East Coast, in terms of being right on the ocean, the big cities are, you know, aren't right there. Yeah. At least New York isn't. So I'd love to live in Australia.
Yeah, I find the ocean very comforting. Whenever I live near the ocean, I've only lived 2 places not by the ocean, and I don't find it as, I find the ocean and the sounds and the smell and everything very comforting.
Mm-hmm. And the culture too of like that are people who often live by the ocean or beaches.
Yeah. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given about living an expat life or the particular way of life that you live, which is quite unique?
The best piece of advice? I really do feel that every place has an opportunity to teach you something about yourself. And so, like, say, for example, for myself, because my daughter, you know, is Zambian and she is mixed race, it's very important for me to be in a place where her identity as, a Black woman is able to develop. And that's not something that can happen in Canada or in the United States to the degree that it can here within Zambia. So I feel like when I'm here that I'm just learning a lot about myself, both the good things about myself and then also the bad things. And then, you know, sort of hopefully I'll get over those bad things and develop and be a better person.
What's the biggest lesson that you've learned, do you think?
The biggest lesson? If there's something that you really need to make you comfortable, bring it with you. Like, don't feel like, oh, I don't need that extra suitcase. If, like, because say for myself, sometimes being away, like, say, for example, my mom right now is really sick back in Canada. Mm-hmm. And, it's hard for me to cope sometimes at times. And so I can't turn to my, you know, normally if I'm going to sometimes other places, I might cope with a certain food or I might cope with spending time with a certain friend or I might cope with like going to a certain fitness class. Mm-hmm. And if some of those things aren't within my control or at my disposal, then if there are there other things that I can have with me that can help me cope. So like, from this time, I brought like a ton of books, like comedy books that I like reading, some type of book that I read that I know it's going to be hard to get here. So I think that's something really important is, you know, as much fun and excitement it is to have, you know, to explore a new place, you still, especially as we get older, I think we have creature, you know, where do you call it, like your creature comforts? Mm-hmm. Like all of us kind of have a couple things that either be it soothe us. And if you, maybe you're not going to be able to get those in another place. So I think, no shame in bringing those along.
No, hear, hear to that.
Nikki, I have to ask you because I didn't quite grab it in your interview when you were saying you understand what she meant when she was talking about in Africa, like what was driving her nuts or what she – and you said, I remember that because I've lived in Africa. What was that?
Okay, load shedding.
Yes.
So load shedding is – okay, so it's when your electricity gets turned off for a certain amount of time every day.
Yes, they keep threatening that could happen here if we don't behave ourselves in Australia, I mean. That's right. What it is.
Uh-huh. Yes, that's what it is. So sometimes in some countries it's all very scheduled and they say between 2 p.m. and 9 p.m. on – alternate days for 6 weeks, you won't have any electricity. Mm-hmm. And in some countries, it's just, and sometimes of year, it's just, oh, that's it. We're off.
Right.
You don't know when your freezer will come back on or your fridge or whatever. So,
yeah.
So it's got more common in South Africa since we left, but it was a bit more random when we were there. But lots of countries in Africa and possibly in Australia, apparently, will have load shedding.
Yes.
As the grid becomes more and more overloaded. Yeah.
Yes.
That's what we're talking about.
And then do people get generators and do things like that?
Yes, people do get generators.
Yes.
I just don't know. I guess as time goes on, more and more people will have alternate ways. So maybe they'll get load shedding, but then they can switch to their own solar or whatever in the future. I don't know how that'll work.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but certainly in South Africa there were generators. Did you have in Libya? Did that happen to you?
Or was it just, no, we
wasn't
had,
called
we,
anything official?
Yeah. If we did, it was a secret. Everything was a secret. Yes, in Libya, no, your power would go off because your house was ill-equipped to run electricity through it,
right.
Which is why you would come home and see fire bursting out the side of the wall of your house. Yes. We had that. We had all sorts of things in the house. I think about it now and I just think, I cannot believe I had three small children in that house and I wasn't freaking out about all the possible things that could go wrong. I can remember there was one night my husband and I were in bed and we heard this noise in our bathroom and he went in to investigate. And as he opened the door, just this shot of water hit him in the face where the pipe had burst, and it was just like flying at full speed out of the side of the wall and like got him. But the thing was, like, we were just like it was cold water because it would have been
Been scalded and off to hospital.
Well, seriously, about 2 or 3 months later, I was at home one day with the kids, and actually my second child was having her afternoon nap. She was a baby. First child was downstairs with me, and I heard this noise and went upstairs, and as I got to the top of the stairs, I could see this, you know, mist of steam coming off this boiling hot water that was all over the floor. And the same thing had happened, but with the hot water. So baby in cot, you know, in her crib, toddler downstairs, toddler, and boiling hot water, you know, all over the ground. But yeah, just constant things like that. But no, to answer you, I can't remember in the summer there being load shedding or, you know, power issues like that. It was more just the houses weren't quite working properly to their best. You know, there were no safety switches turning the electricity off when there was
no
drama.
Breakers. Yeah, no yes. Breakers.
Now, Nikki, yesterday I told you I was reading Three Women, and you were going to tell me about a new book club that you've joined and how it works.
Yeah, so I joined a new book club, and it's a Facebook group with a lot of people in it, and they put up they create a new event every couple of weeks and say, do you want to come? And you have to decide. And they do it every couple of weeks, but they do it a couple of months out. So it's not like you only have 2 weeks to read a book. There's 2 months or so before the particular book club that you know. They have planning 2 to 3 months out.
Got
so
it.
So it's not – you don't choose a new book at the book club you're at 2 weeks later, whatever. So it's pre-planned. So they have someone who's a volunteer, God bless her, and who does it in an administrative role. And she does quite a lot of administration because she runs polls on what book should we choose and what genre and all this kind of stuff.
Gosh, some people are good. Every book group needs that person, don't they?
Yes, they do. They do need that person.
And there's always that one person that's doing it, constantly coming up with the suggestions. That person in our group is called Kelly.
Kelly. And that was Kerry Richards in Hong Kong.
Yes.
But in this book club, at the end, after you've had a book discussion,
yes,
and it gets hosted by a different person who goes each time, and you have to volunteer. And if no one volunteers, then they assign someone who's going to be the host. And the host just has to, from what I've ascertained so far, is to Google some questions for book clubs about the book and sort of lead the discussion. It doesn't take, you know, too long. You ask one or two questions and everybody's off and running.
Yes.
And then at the end, they rate the book out of 5. You have to rate it out of 5, like a Goodreads rating.
Yes.
And you go around the table and everyone says what their rating is, and you have to use one word to describe the book. And if someone's already said your word, you have to have another one.
Oh.
That's the daunting part of this book group.
Unless you wanted to be a real pain in the ass and you just said things like boring or...
No, because all these people have just spent an hour and a half explaining how intellectually they've addressed the book.
Oh,
anyway, so the one I wrote down for today was a book called The Woman in the Window by AJ Finn.
Haven't read it.
Don't rush out. It's a bit of a thriller. People can draw. You can draw a lot of similarities to Girl on a Train.
Okay.
If you read, I liked Girl on a Train.
Yes,
there's a lot of twists and turns, and some you can guess, and you know, some you don't.
You know, I've got to ask you what your word was now. What was your word?
I can't even remember my word now because I was so late to the book club. I'm not sure whether I had to have a word. To that one, I was late. I'll think about it while I'm still explaining. But the book, maybe I said identity, because the book is written by someone called AJ Finn, which is a pseudonym. And the book is written from the perspective of a woman about a woman's story. But if you read the story about the author, and there's an article that I can link to in the New Yorker.
Yes.
The author is a male. And he was a person who was quite high up in editing, publishing circles, but has a reputation as a real interesting character.
Right. So
there's a lot of question marks over his life story and stories he's told.
Oh.
And so actually there's almost as much mystery about the author as there is in the book.
Right.
So I really got into that part of it, the interesting part about the author, and that made me want to read the book.
So tell me, you come out with your word, because I mean, I'm totally seeing a group of very serious women sitting around and everybody says their word and, you know, Karen says compelling and then someone else says triggered and then you say identity. And while you're saying these things, is everybody looking at you and going, like nodding earnestly, yes, Nikki, yes, identity, well, good.
Can
one,
I only
Nikki.
Tell you that my saving grace is that not every, like, English is the second or third language of a lot of these women that read these books. So,
great.
Not that they don't have excellent words. They all have better words than me. But what I mean is I don't feel like a total idiot when I come up with a very basic word because I think it's okay. If it was all native English speakers, I might feel a lot worse because even these women are speaking in a second or third language at such a high level, like taking this book apart or, praising
Isn't that
it.
Great? Isn't that
and
great?
And I just think, God, if I had to do this in German, there is no way.
Oh,
I just
totally.
Say good.
Everything.
Schlecht. Like, I am in awe of these people. But it's if you want a bit of a beach page turner, I'd recommend it. If you're looking for something that's more fulfilling, probably not. I also audiobooked it, and this is one book I did not enjoy audiobooking because it's one of those ones you have to flick quite quickly through.
Right.
And there's a lot of online chat. So every time the online chatter says something, you have to identify them in advance.
Yeah.
So if you're listening, it say, Granny Annie, and then what the Granny Annie said. And then it says,
oh, okay.
Doctor is in the house. And what the doctor is in the house. And it goes on and on and on. And that is really tedious in an audiobook.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not, but when you're looking on a page, it's one of those things that you can absorb without really reading every word, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You can just read the script and not the...
Okay. Anyway. Now, we're running out of time, so I'm just going to quickly ask you about one thing that you've watched on telly that is really taking my fancy and I want to know all about it. Four Weddings and a Funeral, the TV series. I have not even heard about this. This has not been on my radar at all. So you've watched it all?
I've watched it. Well, no, it's a series that's coming out. It's going to have 10 episodes and there's been 8 released. They're releasing on Wednesdays on Hulu at the moment. So there's 2 more to come and then it'll all be done.
And tell me, what's it like?
Well, you know, I watched the first one and I was like, oh, it's very aligned to the movie. It's 4 Weddings and a Funeral over 10 episodes. And it starts with a wedding. It's very goes along very much the same way as the movie does.
Yes.
There are more American characters, so it's a group of American friends who end up in London. So you can have more American characters and then a mix of British characters with that.
Does Hugh Grant have anything to do with this television series?
I don't think he does. I haven't checked the producers, but Andy McDowell appears in it as the mother of one of the cast members. So she, the American heiress who has a bit of an interior design business as on the side as a fun thing to do, her mother is Andy McDowell. And she speaks about her father, who you assume is Hugh Grant, but is not on screen.
Uh-huh.
So they talk about daddy's business and all this kind of stuff. So it is definitely related to the original movie.
Yeah.
They've obviously got some buy-in one way or another. In the beginning, I was torn between, is it kitsch? Do I like it? Do I not? And now I'm totally, deeply, madly in love with it. I really, really enjoy it.
Oh, wow.
Strong recommend.
Excellent. Okay, we're going to save the podcast for later. You can tell me about that at the beginning of our next series. Nikki, I wanted to quickly, because this is the summer series, and yes. I feel that we have to give April Klingmeier a shout out. Now, April is in our Two Fat Expats Facebook group, and April posted something in the summer, and it said, a timeline of my crap, and it was fantastic, and it said this, 6 months before moving, the overly cute lady on the TV said to get rid of it. No longer brings me joy. So I totally purged my crap and now I feel much better. 3 months before moving, none of this crap brings me joy, but I know I'll freak out if I don't take it. 6 weeks before moving, I really better start getting rid of all this crap. Again, 1 month before moving, I better take this crap, but only this crap, the bare minimum crap. 2 weeks before moving, caps lock, why do I have so much crap? Or why do I have this crap? 1 week before moving, none of this crap even matters. 2 days before moving, why is there so much crap everywhere? Crap is literally coming out of the woodwork. And 1 day before moving, just throw all the crap into boxes. Nothing matters anymore. Day of move. Be gone, crap. But I just loved how it then changed tone once she moved. Like it just completely changed tone. If you could feel all the stress before the move of just being completely obsessed with her belongings and what she was going to do with them. But, yes, so 1 week after shipping, I don't care if all that crap falls into the ocean. 2 weeks after shipping, I don't even remember what my crap looks like. 4 weeks after shipping, guess what? My stuff is about to be here. Better check up on my shipment. 4 weeks and 1 day after shipping, and this is so true. So help me God, if you harm one molecule of my beloved treasures, I will burn your shipyard down. It's so that was so true to me, just that the minute you know that it's coming, you want it. Don't you think?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Like you've survived all that time thinking, well, it will get here. But the minute someone tells you that it has reached the dock, you become obsessed with, well, hurry up and get it to my house. She had 5.5 weeks after shipping. Another form. Don't you think my passion is proof enough that I'm not bringing anything here to sell it? 6 weeks after shipping. Oh, my God, my precious belongings have returned to me, kisses the truck driver inappropriately. 6 weeks and 1 day after shipping. I mean, my God, why did I bring all this crap? She was so good. Now, I don't know if April wrote that herself or if she's found it elsewhere, but it is absolutely just the best way of describing the move. Someone I saw, a girlfriend of mine, her shipment arrived a couple of days ago and the headline in her Facebook feed was, it's expat Christmas.
Yes. Yes. And I also want to point out that 6 weeks, that's very speedy for crap.
Yes, yes.
Usually 6 weeks is... you've moved around the corner for that.
Yeah.
Usually it's much longer. We're looking 10 to 12 weeks, but 6 weeks is efficient.
How long did it take for your stuff to get from South Africa to Houston?
To Atlanta?
Yeah, sorry. I got my moves and your moves mixed up.
My husband works for the shipping company that was carrying our container, so we had a vested interest in making sure it got there on time and wasn't rolled, as in they just have to take these off to put a more important customers on.
Yes.
I also asked for it to be in the middle of the ship, so it wasn't on the sides.
Yes.
I think that was not taken care of. I think it took about 8 weeks, or 9 weeks, but then it had to be trucked inland from the coast. So that was longer.
Right.
And it came during peak moving season, and so that also took longer.
Yes.
So when it first arrived, we contacted the removalists. We said, the ship's arrived, and they said, yeah, well, no, we don't have a slot for like 6 weeks.
Wow.
And I said, that's not going to work for me.
And that's that moment when you know it's in the country, but you can't get to it. And you seriously correct. Think of driving down to the dock and asking if you could just, could you just pop the lid open and I'll That's just right. grab a couple of things? Because I really could do with that Graco baby swing right now. Yes, I think our most epic move was Libya to Canada, and
that's with the mice.
Yes, that is with the mice, and I think it got put in the container in, you know, January, Feb, and landed at our door in July.
Oh wow, that yeah. was a long time.
Yeah,
it went a lot of ways.
It went to Turkey. It went to Greece, I think. It went to many places that were nowhere near Canada.
Yeah. And it got offloaded and then waited for a ship going the right
yeah,
way to.
Yeah.
I'm went familiar with
places.
That.
Those, and then those mice just kept multiplying and kept chewing.
The Libyan mice. I wonder how the Libyan mice integrated into Calgary.
I always think about their accents. You know, they would have come off speaking Arabic. And they would have been freezing.
That's right. I wonder if they were survival of the fittest or they just did, never made it. Yeah. Anyway. All right. So that's it. And that is a wrap for season 5. So we're calling this the end of season 5. And next yes. time you hear us, it'll be season 6 officially.
And we decided, didn't we, Nikki, that we're not doing the alphabetized.
No.
Right.
We have to come up with a new plan for our weekly interviews.
Yes, yes.
So we might run a poll on that in the Facebook group.
Oh, I think that's a great idea. I might go and do that for you now.
Okay. Perfect.
I will All speak right. to you very soon. Lovely
okay,
to chat.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.